from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. After months of controversy over cabinet appointees, alleged ties to Russia, and conflicts of interest, President-elect Donald Trump will be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States tomorrow. And we'll preview the inauguration with KQED's Scott Schaefer and Bloomberg's Shannon Pettypiece. We'll also check in with Bay Area voters headed to D.C. and find out what's motivating them to travel to the nation's capital this weekend. And we want to hear from you. What do you want the new president to know about you, the Bay Area, or your community as he takes office? We'll take that question up next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The nation's capital is bracing for friction and protest as thousands of President-elect Donald Trump supporters and protesters arrive for the inauguration tomorrow and for Saturday's protest marches. We'll talk later with some Bay Area voters to hear what motivated them to travel to the nation's capital, and as part of NPR's election year member station collaboration, A Nation Engaged, we're asking you, our listeners, what do you want the new president to know about you, the Bay Area, or your community as he takes office? You can give us a call now and let us know. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. Again, what do you want from the new administration also during the next 4 years, and what are your hopes or fears? And joining us first to preview Inauguration Day is Scott Schaefer with this new lofty title of his, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. He's with us from Washington. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Michael.
And we're also going to say good morning to Shannon Pettypiece, who's with us also from the nation's capital, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Good morning, Shannon Pettypiece.
Thank you. Good morning, or good afternoon where I am.
Yeah, it is good afternoon where you are. Glad to have you aboard here. And let me begin, Scott, with you. I want to get, just from you, if I can, a picture visually for listeners. This morning's Chronicle talks about miles of fencing and police dogs and streets barricaded. I mean, there's a lot of security, and a lot, maybe even more security, because of the expectation of so many protesters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed it today, Michael. I went from my hotel to the Jefferson Memorial to interview some folks, and there were a lot more street closures. The barricades are in place, if not up already. There are, as you said, a lot of presence of police, police dogs, which is, you know, to a certain extent always true here in the nation's capital, but definitely ramping it up. And I think there's an expectation that anything could happen tomorrow. The protesters, this disrupt J20 group, pledging to try to interrupt as much of tomorrow's events as possible. Whether or not that'll really happen, who knows? But there is a huge police presence, and they're expecting between 700 to 800,000 people in the city, both for the inauguration and the protests. And so the city is getting ready for that, and it's a, you know, a combination of excitement and trepidation, depending if you're a Republican or a Democrat. And of course, many Democrats are choosing not to attend the inauguration tomorrow, and there's some feelings on the Republican side and the Democratic side about that. But ready or not, here it comes.
What kind of feelings have you been able to gauge on that score?
Well, you know, about a third or even more of the Democrats in the congressional delegation from California have decided that they, I think, to a certain extent, in support, in solidarity with John Lewis, the Georgia congressman who had said over the last weekend that Trump was not a legitimate president. And then they got into a Twitter war, or at least Trump went after him on Twitter, said some things that were really very offensive to not just African-Americans, but many others. And so they're staying away. But you know, I talked with Central Valley Republican Congressman David Valadao just half an hour ago, and you know, he was saying, "Look, I didn't vote for Barack Obama last time around or in 2008, but I was there, and I think there's a feeling that look, if we want to really get off on a good start, let's show up, and then we can talk about our differences going forward. But let's not get off on the wrong foot." Of course, Democrats are saying, "Well, he started it." You know, it has kind of a high school cafeteria food fight feel to it sometimes. But it's serious. And obviously, the feelings are still raw from the election on the part of Democrats. And I think that many people, including some Republicans, including David Valadao, feel that Donald Trump hasn't done enough to reach out to build bridges. He continues to attack Hillary Clinton and others. And so I think everyone on all sides is hoping for a very conciliatory, open extended hand in the inaugural address tomorrow from President Trump.
And once again, Scott Schaefer is senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, and Shannon Pettypiece is White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. A lot of estimates, a lot of guessing, Shannon Pettypiece, about how many estimates, as Scott said earlier, about maybe a half a million. But Donald Trump, for example, is predicting a record crowd, and I don't know that we can really gauge how many people are going to be there, but certainly when you look back at 2009 and a record estimated 1.8 million turning out for President Obama, it's probably not going to approach that, is it?
Probably not. I mean, we've always been wrong estimating, trying to make predictions about Donald Trump. Yeah, probably not. I mean, that the President Obama's first inauguration really had that historic feel to it. I was actually just talking to a woman yesterday about how she brought her newborn son to come see the inauguration, who was 2 months old, in the baby carrier, because she was an African-American woman, and she wanted her son to be able to say that he was at the inauguration of the first African-American president. And so it had that historic element that drove a lot of people out to it. So I think we'll probably get to without that element to it, yeah, probably closer to the 800,000-900,000 mark. And it will be interesting. Again, I can't make any predictions. Crowd size predictions are so tough. But whether the protests or the women's march on Saturday, how their crowd compares to the one we see on Friday. And there's a potential that a large, big crowd on Saturday at the women's march, you know, could really kind of send a signal about, to the new president.
Well, there are about 99 groups expected out on Saturday, along with the women's march. There are 63 actually probably expected today. I'm wondering, though, in terms of record breaking and all of that, there may be fewer celebrities at this than have ever been at any previous inauguration. And in fact, smaller parties than previously is shaping it. There are only going to be 3 official balls, far fewer than any of the predecessors. Can you talk a moment, Shannon, about the fact that there are, from many people's perspective, no A-list celebrities at this inauguration?
Yeah, it's certainly for the incoming president, incoming administration, you know, it doesn't look good when you have people pulling out, when you have the Rockettes, you know, protesting.
The cover band for Bruce Springsteen pulled out, in fact.
When the cover band pulls out, yeah, that's but really, I mean, I think that 2 months from now, that is the sort of thing that will be, I don't know, water under the bridge, or we won't be thinking about that, or we won't be talking about that maybe even 2 weeks from now, once, you know, there's going to be a lot more issues that come up in this presidency, very, very, very quickly. So, yeah, it doesn't look good initially, but I think we'll probably move on from that.
Well, what do you expect is going to happen initially? And I'm going to ask Scott the same question when we hit the ground running on Monday with this new administration. There's certainly been a great deal of concern expressed about the fact that they don't, as some commentators see it, quite have their act together or the people in place that they should have as far as personnel.
I was at the press conference today with Trump spokesman Sean Spicer, who really worked hard to dispel this notion that they're not going to be ready on day one. They said, you know, they have, 500-something sort of temporary employees that they've put in these crucial positions to keep things running while they wait for Congress to not just appoint all the cabinet, or not appoint, but, you know, to confirm all the cabinet members, but then the cabinet members with their deputies and their undersecretaries and all those. So they have said they've got a team in place that's going to be able to get them going day one. Obviously, they blame Democrats and Congress for not moving faster on confirming their nominees, but they say they're going to be ready. And there's a lot the president could potentially do without cabinet members in place, or even without, the support of Congress on board. I asked today whether or not the president was going to wait until his cabinet was in place, so his U.S. Trade Representative, his Commerce Secretary, before he started taking action on TPP and NAFTA, which are the priorities, he said. And the spokesman said, not necessarily, that the president wants to move on those very quickly, on ripping up TPP and reopening negotiations with NAFTA. And he's, not necessarily going to wait until his whole cabinet and every undersecretary is in place before he starts moving on that.
What's your take on that, Scott? I mean, readiness of this administration to get going?
Yeah. You know, it's always best to have your top people in place. That said, government is a huge bureaucracy, and most of the bureaucrats are not really going anywhere. It's the political appointees in most cases who will be moving on. I think where it's probably most important, of course, is national security. There's still a Joint Chiefs of Staff that's in place. But, you know, this president is coming into office with not the best relationship, to say the least, with the intelligence community. He was feuding on Twitter with the CIA director, John Brennan, who will be leaving.
Yeah, he'll be naming a new CIA director pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, they have one, but he hasn't been confirmed yet, Pompeo. But, you know, I think that's the area where there is concern. If there were to be some kind of a national or international emergency, you really want to, and that's always the case, even if you have your cabinet secretaries in place, that's the thing that I think always concerns the president the most is that transition, making sure that that's as smooth as possible. And I think that's why some people have been concerned that Trump reportedly hasn't been taking on daily briefings, intelligence briefings. He doesn't seem to be taking it as seriously as some would like him to. And so hopefully there won't be any big crisis. But, you know, the other big agencies, energy and education and EPA, you know, those things will continue to lumber on without necessarily a new cabinet secretary. But, you know, I would expect that the votes for those cabinet folks, you know, they will happen fairly soon within the next week or two.
Yeah, since you mentioned energy, I think it's important to note that Rick Perry today spoke about, I guess, his feeling of regret at having once said that the Department of Energy, which he's now going to head up, presumably, if he's approved, should not exist. And also, Vice President Pence earlier today said, gave some gracious words about the transition, even though there's some blaming, as Shannon said, where the Democrats are concerned. He gave high marks to them for moving along in the transitional trajectory so well. I had said earlier that I want to hear from you, our listeners, and said to give us a call if you have something that you'd like to say about what you want the new president to know about you or the Bay Area or your community as he takes office, and what the new administration perhaps ought to be doing for the next 4 years, or what are your hopes and what are your fears. And let me start to bring some of our callers on. I want to begin, in fact, with Tiffany, who's joining us this morning from Vallejo. Tiffany, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for asking this question to the public. So what I'd like to say is, I'm an attorney here in the Bay Area. I represent labor unions, and my husband is undocumented. We've been trying for about 5 years to get his legal status and have been unable to do so. And I just want the president-elect to know that families like ours aren't going anywhere, and we will be fighting every day, because our families are what this country is all about. And so we will be fighting every day for our children.
I'm sorry, Tiffany, your call's getting garbled because of the connection, unfortunately, but I certainly get the message. And you want to opine on that, Shannon Pennybeast? I mean, in terms of Donald Trump and the undocumented and just what we can expect? In many ways, we're talking about something that's virtually unpredictable, aren't we?
Well, yes. I mean, I think in a way there is sort of unpredictability, but there are things Trump seems to be very consistent on and very consistently talking about. He just did a Fox News interview a few days ago where he was asked about the Dreamers, which is obviously a different scenario, it sounds like, than what this caller is referring to. But where he said he does, you know, understand the difficulty of that situation of a child who was brought here undocumented by their parents and has grown up in this country and it's the only home they've ever known, and understanding the difficulty of that and saying that in his plan, you know, he will look to address that. And he hopes to have a plan, an immigration plan, in the next 2 to 3 months, which might be optimistic timing. Kind of depends on where priorities go. So, I mean, to that extent, maybe he's softening his tone on immigration a little bit. He's kind of, you know, taken a very strong tone on immigration, obviously, but, you know, also said that, you know, people willing to go through the legal channels who are going to come here appropriately, that we want high-skilled workers from overseas to be able to get here. You know, he says those things on the other hand as well, too. So it'll hard to be... I guess we'll have to wait till we see his plan, till we actually know how all those things shake out.
Let me go to Liz Ritchie, who is a Bay Area resident attending the inauguration, field operations manager, in fact, for the Northern California Trump campaign. Good morning, Liz Ritchie.
Good morning.
And you are in Washington, D.C., and tell us about your level of excitement and what you hope will be pretty much for you to observe and be a part of.
Well, I'm, of course, over the top excited about being here and having the opportunity to participate in what I consider to be the most historic election in my lifetime and possibly for the rest of my lifetime. So this has been well anticipated for quite a long time. Trump supported from the day he came down the escalator. In fact, before then, hoping he would have run in 2012. So believe me, I am more than excited. I am just absolutely elated that we finally are going to have Donald Trump as our president.
Well, not to put any shadows into your elation, but what do you say to those who feel just the opposite of you and who feel fear about a Donald Trump presidency, particularly, let's say, women who feel that he's not going to be responsive to reproductive rights or to, for example, those who are on the pro-choice side?
Well, I can say as a woman, I have, of course, there's a lot of division on reproductive rights within the women themselves. We have, for instance, myself is a very much a pro-life person, so I completely support Donald's stance on all of the women's issues and feel that he is on the right side of that decision. And I know that there are many who see it from an opposite perspective, but I do believe that for the other issues, if we look at just how he's placed women into senior positions all around him, he has a high regard and respect, including looking at Kellyanne Conway, who is the first woman campaign manager and successful campaign manager to boot for her presidential candidate, Donald Trump. So there's a high regard for women who are effective and well-versed in what they're doing, just like he has a high regard for anyone who has accomplished themselves to be excellent at what they know how to do.
Of course, he's been criticized for not having respect for women and for being sort of a grabber of women or somebody who seems to be at least in that silo, so to speak. That doesn't bother you?
Well, you know, I look back at things I've done 20 years ago, and I was proud of every single thing I would ever have said or done. And my answer to that is youth is at times bombastic and we do foolish things. So I would say he's mature, a different person as far as his regard. And when you speak like that anymore, I've never heard him speak like that in current times. So we have to realize that was words and it wasn't actions. And we have had presidential candidates. Not only candidates, but also people who have been in our White House who have done a lot worse than that.
Well, Liz Ritchie, I appreciate your being with us. I hope you enjoy your time in Washington, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. I was honored to be asked. Thank you very much, and I'm looking very much forward to my opportunity here today.
And again, Liz Ritchie is Bay Area resident attending the inauguration, field operations manager for the Northern California Trump campaign. I want to hear from another listener here, and let's go to Berkeley and welcome Peter. Peter, you're on.
Hi, good morning. You know, somebody mentioned to me the other day, are you going to the anti-Trump rally on Saturday? And it really made me think that our community should be pulling together not to be anti-Trump, but to be pro-principle. I mean, this is a time when the principles of honesty, respect, communication, cooperation, forgiveness as appropriate. These are the stars that we really need to look for guidance that can potentially bring people together on both sides.
Well, Peter, I thank you for that statement. And let me go back to, again, we're talking with Scott Schaefer from Washington and Shannon Pennypeace, who's also in Washington. And Shannon Pennypeace, not only are there a lot of expectations in terms of protest numbers, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are about the impact or potential impact, and we hear from Scott on this too, of course, with respect to a movement that is afoot to try to get people not only not to watch or listen to the inauguration, because Trump is very much ratings-minded and concerned about numbers, as we know, recent battle with Arnold Schwarzenegger, in fact, sort of erupted over The Apprentice and the hosting of The Repentance, because Arnold didn't have the big numbers that Donald Trump had. And as I said earlier, he's expecting a record crowd and all that. But there is a movement to try to make people look to sports or cooking shows or things of that sort so that they won't necessarily have the numbers that they would normally have and therefore make another statement about Trump. In other words, lots of different kinds of ways of protesting other than people being in Washington. Shannon Pettypiece?
Yeah, there are definitely those, you know, boycott the inauguration movements. On the numbers, though, I mean, I remember around the conventions and everyone talking about, you know, the Republican convention was, you know, watched by fewer people in the Democratic convention, or all the things about how the, you know, Republican convention didn't go off well and it was boycotted with this and all the, you know, all the was unorganized and all this stuff about the convention. And then, of course, you know, the Donald Trump, you know, wins the election. And so I guess, yeah, I would just say reading too much into those things of the ratings and as you were saying earlier, you know, the celebrities and the concerts, I guess, is, you know, maybe the way I kind of come at things. I don't know if there's even really too much, you know, we can look into and take away from those sometimes when you look at all the sort of predictions that were made in the past, you know, 18 months about Trump and his popularity.
Shannon Pettypiece again is White House correspondent for Bloomberg News, and I thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Forum program.
Thank you.
Appreciate your being with us. Let me go back to Scott Schaefer, who's senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. I guess the bigger question is all of these protests, whether they're going on in the numbers that you're seeing there in Washington now, Scott, or you're going to see on Saturday, or other kinds of, what kind of real impact do they have?
Well, you know, I think one thing to keep in mind is that there are women's marches all over the country. There is one in San Francisco and Sacramento and in L.A. And I think that there is some thought that that might diminish the numbers who come out to Washington because it's cheaper and easier to just do it in your own community. You know, that being said, all this emphasis on ratings and how many people are showing up, those things won't matter in 48, 72 hours so much. I just want to come back to what Peter, the caller, said. You know, I think it is fine to be, and people should obviously stand up for their principles. And but just being anti something isn't necessarily going to get you where you want to go. And I think that was a criticism of Hillary Clinton's campaign, is that she spent altogether too much time criticizing Trump and not enough time saying what she wanted to do. And I realize there are a lot of factors in how that campaign turned out, and she got 3 million more votes and all that. But the point is, what Peter was saying, the caller, is I don't want to lose that idea, which is people should, you know, stick to principles and talk about issues. And just whether or not you watch the inauguration or not on TV, you know, I don't think that's really where it's going to be at. And it's thinking locally, what can you do in your own community to make a difference, whether it's supporting or opposing what the president's doing or what's happening in your local, you know, city council, board of supervisors. You know, there has to be some healing.
And do you think you hear the music coming up, Scott, so I'm just wondering, you think the protest movement in Washington is too fractured? Is that a problem?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think there will be big numbers.
Okay.
But I think it's just the beginning. I don't think it's the end.
Got to say goodbye to you, Scott. Thank you so much for joining us. When we return, we're going to hear more from you, our listeners. We're also going to hear from a Bay Area resident who's participating in the Women's March. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and as part of NPR's Election Year member station collaboration, A Nation Engaged, we are asking you, our listeners, what do you want the new president to know about you, the Bay Area, or your community as he takes office? And let me go to some of our callers. Let me get George on next. George, thanks for waiting.
Hello. I believe that there's a lot of different fronts in which many people find Donald Trump repulsive, but what I want him to understand when he takes office, I hope that he has a sobering reality that the government is not a business. It's not a corporation where its assets can be liquidated and redistributed and reconstituted. The American people are here. They'll remain here. And he needs to represent all of us and not just a very narrow constituency. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Appreciate hearing from you. We'll hear from some more listeners. But first, we're going to go to Rithi Desi, who is with us as well. I indicated earlier she's a Bay Area resident. She's participating in the Women's March and going to Washington, and she's going to be in that march on Saturday. And Rithi Desi, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Well, it's, I suppose, an honor to be in the march on Saturday, too, from your perspective. What do you hope to accomplish in that march?
Well, it's a moment. I feel like it's a moment of empowerment. Will be a moment of empowerment in a seemingly powerless world. You know, after the election, there was a lot of grief and a lot of dismay, and so this is the time when we can, you know, stand in the backyard of the Trump, of the White House, and also the backyard of the Republican Party, and I want Trump to hear and hopefully even see the collective voices of hundreds of thousands of people who have traveled from all over this country and also internationally to voice their disgust at this administration and the Republican Party.
Have you been to Washington to protest before? Is that part of your history, personally?
I have, yeah. We actually lived there for 10 years, and I participated. I actually protested at the Bush inauguration when the election was stolen from Gore, and then I participated in all the Iraq War protests and women's rights protests, yeah.
So part of what you're protesting is what you characterized as a stolen election or an illegitimate election?
I mean, especially with the Russian involvement, potential involvement, and they're potentially swaying the election. It's very frightening. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many issues where, you know, we'll be there protesting. I don't think that, you know, we're not there protesting just one simple thing, one issue. We're protesting many, many issues that he has assaulted so many people with, or he's been so assaulted, you know, he's been so offensive with. And I think that then, you know, we go home and that's when the real work begins, when we, you know, people have to decide, you know, what issues are most important to them and what they're going to be fighting for. And some of those issues intersect, you know, and some people will choose more than one issue. But I don't think people, you know, people realize that they cannot not be political anymore. There's no sitting on the couch anymore.
We're talking to Rithi Desi, who again is a Bay Area resident participating in the Women's March in Washington on Saturday. One of the arguments you hear is, well, it may be not even an argument so much as a concern that there are too many issues, that doesn't keep the focus. For example, there are women who are very concerned about reproductive rights, and they want that to be kind of in a triage on the top of the scale of what is important to emphasize.
On Saturday?
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, people are going to be there for a variety of reasons. Of course, women's rights is definitely one of them. Environment, healthcare, civil rights, racial justice, voting rights. I mean, I don't think anything can be quite at the top right now just because there's so many issues, you know, wealth and income inequality, and there's just so many issues he's so offensive. His administration is just so offending.
What are you going to be focusing on, though? I mean, in terms of your own interests, or what is most important to you?
Well, I work in the education field, so definitely education. I worked for a long time in the environmental field, so definitely that. But I also feel like voting rights right now is hugely important. You know, the Republicans have control of the majority of governorships and state legislatures, and so they've consequently, you know, denied democracy to millions and millions of people, and by redistricting and all that. So, I feel like voting rights and also getting the DNC back in order. I feel like the DNC has failed us, and the DNC needs to stop being the party of the elite and the Wall Street and go back to its roots. Those are the issues that I see.
Well, I wish you
personally.
I wish you good luck, and I thank you so much for joining us, and appreciate your being with us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Rithi Desi, a Bay Area resident who will be in the Women's March on Washington, D.C., in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Let me read some comments that are coming in, and you can add your voice here by letting us know your thoughts, emailing us forum@kqed.org or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Rick writes, please, celebrity participation in an inaugural metric? You have to be kidding. No, it's not kidding. It's been all the tweeting and well, Donald Trump himself, I suppose, as a celebrity, and Meryl Streep and so forth, it's become, well, somewhat central in many people's thinking. Let me go to some more of your comments. Newbright's, Trump thinks winning is enough. We should let him know it's not. And here's Larry, who writes, I'm treating this period as being under occupation, one with benefits of being able to protest without fear of arrest, but occupation nonetheless. I will not watch the inauguration on Friday or accept Trump as president any more than I would if we had been invaded and a puppet placed in that office. Again, you can add your voice here, and let me go to some of your calls and hear what you have to say. Patricia joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. Love your program.
Thank you.
Thanks for giving us a voice. I wanted to comment on some readings I've had last couple of days about the current administration thinking of challenging the President Bush President Emergency Plan for AIDS relief. Although people might not agree with the overall modalities of this plan, when the plan started, only 55,000 people in Africa were on life-saving drugs. Now, many years down the line, we have over 11 million people who benefit from this plan. And naming such a plan as an entitlement plan is very despairing to me for having been doing 20 years of AIDS research. So if a president-elect Trump would just kind of keep an eye on that and not let such plans disappear, I would really appreciate it.
It would be nice to be surprised, as many were with President Bush the second, because he did extend a great deal of help with AIDS in Africa, much more than people had anticipated. Well,
yes.
I thank you for that, and I hope your message will be heard. In fact, I hope that's true for all of you who are calling in, who want to be heard and who want to express yourself. Let me go to Dan next. Dan, you're on. Morning.
Yeah, thank you very much. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I'm old enough to admit that I went to the large protests in the late 60s, the Vietnam protests, when there were, you know, almost a million people protesting on the mall. So I'm not going to be able to go this time. I live in California, obviously, now, but I really support the people that are going. And the woman who spoke a moment ago, her views are very similar to mine. And I want all these things to be true, that the protests will be heard and that somehow we'll be able to make our voices heard. But my gut feeling all along, all through the primaries and all the way up to now, is that unfortunately I feel like, you know, what would you do if Tony Soprano were elected president? I mean, do you really think he'd listen to reason? You really think that's what you got? You know, I just kind of don't.
And well, you remember early on there was protest, and Donald Trump caused a good deal of sensation where he said, you know, take him out, punch him in the mouth, those kinds of things, without necessarily showing or courting, I suppose, what you could call much concern about the person.
No,
who was
that's
protesting.
What I'm saying. Yeah. I could have predicted he would have said that before he said it. You know, I mean, if you just look at him like Tony Soprano, sadly, very sadly, I think you're looking with an unvarnished lens. And until the feds actually shut him down, which I think could happen, you know, unless they're corrupted too, which, of course, could happen in Soprano land, I don't hold a lot of hope. I really don't. And his appointments for cabinet are just like putting Pauly and all those guys in power, you know, except they all have a lot more money than Soprano's guys had.
But, I think Donald Trump, as a guy from Queens, would resent the New Jersey parallel you're making to Tony Soprano,
well,
probably.
Fair enough. But there's got to be a New Jersey mob, you know, and he's in it.
Well, I thank you for the call. Good to hear from you, Dan. Appreciate it. And here's Gina, who writes, I'm a woman of mixed descent, a Mexican Arab American born in the United States. Donald Trump's ideology and messaging are further isolating marginalized populations and fomenting racist and misogynistic beliefs. I understand that there are also many Americans, especially in middle America, who are feeling forgotten about and marginalized. We have to make sure that all Americans, documented or not, are taken care of. And we'll hear some more of your thoughts and your voices. I've got a self-acclaimed or self-admitted communist here on the line. Jim, that's you, I guess, huh?
That's me. I'm a communist at heart. What I want to tell Trump is, so far what he's done as part of as president-elect is pretty amazing. And I applauded because basically he's implementing core communist economic policy by stepping into company boards and putting his thumb down, top-down centralized government control, and telling them where they can or cannot place their factories to optimize work for American workers, and threatening them with tariffs and taxes, punitive taxes, if they do not comply with a centralized government economic policy.
You also have some major capitalists who have been appointed to the cabinet, however, which speaks to a very different kind of ideology.
It's the Trump effect, right? We don't know whether Trump will win when he's president or whether his cabinet will win.
Well, I thank you for the call, and we'll get more of you on here. Again, we're just asking a question, and this is in conjunction with NPR and the Election Year Member Station Collaboration. And again, you can email us as well as call us on this. What you want from the new administration during the next 4 years, and what are your hopes or fears? But also, what would you want the president to know about you or the Bay Area or your community? And again, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And of course, you can also call us. The number again is 866-733-6786. Here's Rachel, who writes, I'm traveling all the way from the Bay Area to Washington, D.C. to attend the Women's March on Washington to show Trump on the first day of his presidency that I will stand up and fight for women's reproductive rights, for my children's rights, and to keep women alive and safe. On the first day and for 4 years, I and hundreds of thousands like me will not be silent, and I hope he gets our message. Amit writes, listener named Amit says, Trump is not my president, and I hope that he will fail as miserably in office as he does in everything else he has done. Let me get more of your calls on. We go next to George in Ohio. George, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. And I must say that I've enjoyed your program for years, and I think you're a true Renaissance man. And I listen to you sometimes twice a day.
Well, thank you.
But I'm an over-the-road trucker. I've been a lifelong Democrat my whole life. I'm 67 years old. I'm a Marine Corps vet. I'm a working man, Michael. And it's just astounding to me that any working man could vote for somebody like Donald Trump. It's just amazing. And I think that, you know, one of your guests glossed lightly over the fact that Mrs. Clinton won the election by 3 million votes. And we're not going to forget that she won by 3 million votes. And as Leo Durocher once said, and I quote, we was robbed. You know, and I'm really kind of amazed that there's not a big hue and cry to get rid of the Electoral College. And I think that definitely needs to go. It's a remnant of our embarrassing past when black people were counted as three-fourths of a human being. And it's just, I want him to know that he better toe the line, because if he doesn't, there's going to be a revolution in this country. I've always thought that there might be a second revolution, and he might be the cause of it.
Well, George, I have to tell you, there is a movement to do away with the Electoral College, and it has some perhaps steam behind it. Of course, it did have some steam after the Gore defeat by George W. Bush, but perhaps there's even more now in light of the ascendancy of Donald Trump. And I thank you for your kind words, and thank you for joining us on Forum this morning. I've asked for tweets, and here's one from Karen, who says, as president, Donald Trump needs to be more accessible and transparent than he's been up until now. I suggest that Americans boycott his Twitter, i.e. stop following him. This one-way communication medium is indicative of a dictatorship, which is unacceptable for our American democracy. And let me bring more of our callers on. We go next to you, Mike. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for your call. So a few years ago, I met Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago, and he was bragging about not paying $500,000 for a marble fountain that he had put in. And my request to Donald Trump would be not to rip off the American people like he has so many of his contractors and employees throughout his bankruptcy tenure in America.
Okay. The message to Donald Trump, don't rip off the American people as you did with others during your business dealings. And we are getting messages from people that are going out, and I don't hope they're just not going out into the airwaves or into space, so to speak. Here's June, who writes, The tradition of inauguration is bigger than just one man. It is our country's way of officially introducing a new president, not only to the people, but also to the rest of the world. It says to me, this is how it's done in a democracy. I agree with the criticisms of the president-elect by Congressman John Lewis, Congressman Huffman, and all of the others whom I've heard interviewed as to why they'll not be attending. But I do not agree with their using their own personal agendas as reasons for slighting the event. And this, of course, is a big debate, which we could take up and do a whole hour on. Came up in an hour interview I did yesterday with Joe Cachette. Is it respect for the presidency that ought to impel, let's say, a congressional representative to actually appear at an inauguration? Or is it a way of saying this inauguration, as John Lewis did, is illegitimate, and the presidency itself is illegitimate? Let's bring some more calls on. Patrick, thank you for waiting. Join us on Forum.
Hi. I'm driving away from SFO, where I just dropped off my wife, to go to Washington. I am extremely proud of her. And I'd just like Trump to know, and I'd like Scott Schaefer to know, that when a president-elect tells CNN that they can't ask a question, they're fake news, this man does not deserve to have people at his inauguration, and he doesn't deserve to have people going, oh, I want to join you. I'm here to join you. No, I'm not here to join him, and I will not join him. He has done nothing since he was elected to prove that he will be a real good American president.
Patrick, can you tell us somewhat? I don't want to put you in that sometimes difficult position of speaking for your wife, but why is she going? What did she communicate to you about why she's going?
She's going to show Donald Trump that she is, that there's a power out there that will work against him if he does things that are in the vein of things that he has suggested he will do. And she's there to walk with women and be proud and show solidarity for things like women's rights, of course. But she's with me, and I'm very worried about the rights of the press in this country. And I, as a veteran of the Vietnam War and a user of Fort Miley, and think that the VA is the best health care I have ever had, and I've been on some big corporate policies before, but the VA is the best health care, and I'm going to fight like crazy to make sure that the VA is always there.
Well, you know, Trump's been bashing the VA, but he's also been saying that he's going to do more for veterans than any other previous president has done. You don't take him at his word, I assume.
His idea of doing more is to give them vouchers so they can pay an insurance company. If I can say something quickly.
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
3 years ago, I argued with a nurse practitioner at the VA about getting a biopsy, and she said, Mr. Keller, you were exposed to Agent Orange. She looked at my file and knew I was exposed to Agent Orange. She said, you're a risk. You're a high risk. That January of 14, I had a biopsy. In February of 14, I was diagnosed with cancer. In April of 14, I had surgery, and in June of 14, I was pronounced cancer-free, and I have been ever since then.
Well, that's good news, and congratulations for that, and I thank you for the call. I'm looking at a couple of remarks coming in from listeners that I want to get on the air here. Here's Daryl, who says, and I said this whole debate has been pretty fierce about whether lawmakers should protest or actually attend the inauguration, particularly Democratic lawmakers here in Northern California. Daryl says, I'm disgusted by Scott Schaefer's comparing the decision by Democratic lawmakers to boycott the inauguration to a high school food fight. There are innumerable valid reasons for these representatives to dispute the legitimacy of this election result and candidate. And these kind of false equivalencies are a huge problem in today's media, which contributed to the election of Donald Trump. And journalists who participate in this normalization need to be called out openly and often. Here's Diana, who writes, the Women's March on Saturday is for human rights, women's rights, immigration rights, and health care, not to protest Donald Trump. And let's go to more of your calls. Let's go to Phoenix. Good morning. That is not Phoenix,
Hi.
Arizona, but Phoenix and San Jose. Hi.
How's it going? So, I'm for Donald Trump because he believes in the best.
I believe that, you know, he's going to do a good job. I think people are going to, and they're, you know, they're kind of judging him a little too early here. He hasn't even started, right? You got to give him a chance. I think he needs to really realize, and if he already knows this, that there's a reason America is the best. And the reason is freedom of expression. As long as we have that here, we will always be the leaders of innovation. We lose that, we're not the best anymore.
Would you want to send him, we're sending kind of messages here to Donald Trump. What would you want him to know about your community?
I'm a 33-year-old Middle Eastern man who lives in the United States. I got a green card. I lost my green card. So I'm at risk, to be honest with you. And, you know,
he may send you home.
I'm a spiritual guy, but, you know, I've been dealing with racism my entire life here. So one thing I do hope doesn't happen, which I'm starting to see, is that somehow this has empowered those people out there who think it's okay to, you know, treat people like me, you know, like a terrorist or something, even though I love this country more than anything. I bet you he put half these guys on the air, and I will tell them more about their history than they even know. So I love America, and I hope he believes in the best. Because as long as we have that H-1G visa, I think that's what's going on. As long as we have that and freedom of expression, America will always be the best.
All right, Phoenix, good patriotic statement. Good to hear from you, and I thank you for the call. And here's Elizabeth, who says, unlike some of your guests, I believe the marches that will take place around the country are vital. We all need to stand up and make our voices heard. And let me bring another caller on here, and that's Liam. You're on.
Hi, big fan of the show. You know, my main concern really is about national security. What happens when Donald Trump tweets classified information or information pertaining to our national security? It would be no surprise to me, and I'm just waiting for that to happen. You know, would the rest of the government have the ability just to start withholding sensitive information from him, knowing that we really can't trust his judgment to make the right call? It's, you know, time and time again, he's proven to us that he talks a big game, but at the end of the day, he's going to do what he wants regardless of policy or what the rest of the government thinks.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of criticism, even from within the ranks of the Republican Party, of all the tweeting that's going on. And in fact, recently I saw an interview where Mike Pence was asked, Charlie Rose asked him, in fact, what do you think about all this tweeting, and does it undermine policy, and does it divert from policy and all the rest of it? And, you know, as a good vice president often is enjoined to do, he said, I think it's fine that the president is doing that. He has strong feelings. He has to let them loose and so forth. But you're suggesting a kind of impulsiveness that has concerned many people. I mean, you would hope that your concern about national security may be over concern, but one doesn't know when those tweets go out with such impulsivity. Let me thank you for the call. Here's some more comments from our listener. Sue writes, demonstrating is important, but it's also easy and often fun. Organizing is less fun and much more difficult, but much more important. Let's all march and show our displeasure and then come home, roll up our sleeves, and get down to the real work of defeating much of what Trump stands for. Scott tweets, the majority of America, which is my community, does not approve or trust him. DJ writes, social media helped Trump win and will also help him keep him under check. And let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Liz. Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi, Michael. I love your show. I listen to it all the time, and appreciate what you guys do for the public.
Thank
you. I live in San Francisco. I'm going to the Women's March with some friends this weekend, and my first time to Washington. I think that post-election, a lot of people felt quite deflated by the results and felt like they didn't matter. And so I think one of the big reasons why I'm going along with my friends are not just to support women's rights, but just to show that there is strength in numbers and to be involved and active in the process. I think if we show our solidarity, it's empowering to everyone, and then we don't go through, you know, the next 4 years with a large sense of hopelessness.
Well, Liz, I thank you and hope that you realize your expectations by going to Washington, and I thank you for the call. And let me bring another caller on here, and that's Angela. You're on. Morning.
Good morning, Michael. I will also be marching here in San Francisco with my 14-year-old daughter and a number of her friends. The comment I want to make, actually, is that I think, you know, Donald Trump is using the media in very savvy ways. And I think it's going to take journalists stepping up and actually, you know, having to step outside a time-honored role that journalists have had, which is to try to be impartial, except in kind of op-ed or opinion pieces. And for example, at the last first press conference, you know, when the senior CNN correspondent was shut down and denied a voice, I think journalists are going to be required to actually, you know, intervene and say, actually, no, I'd like to give my time to the CNN correspondent or something, because it's we are not playing under normal rules here. The rules are being defied, and as long as we continue to kind of expect the same levels of decency that we are upholding, we're not going to make progress. And I think demonstrating matters. I think it's a multi-pronged approach, and I think everybody's kind of contribution at this point, everybody is going to be required to stand up to make a difference and make a change, because it's just not going to happen by playing by the old.
Well said, Angela, and good luck in Washington. Thank you for joining us on the program. Actually, she's marching locally, that's right. For more coverage of the inauguration, by the way, tune into KQED Public Radio tonight at 6:30 p.m. for a special from the California Report, From Obama to Trump, California Prepares for the New President, hosted by Scott Schaefer, and Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. We get online support from Amanda Font and Jeremy Siegel. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. Thank you for listening. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.